This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and the Chelsea Fan Cast, who today are Stamford Chidge, Jonathan Kidd, Kiddo, and Dan Silver. Gents, Silvero, how are we? Must have been an odd week without Chelsea.
I've forgotten about them.
who?
Yeah, exactly. What's happened?
Who?
Could be only 2 hours.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic week with no, like, sadness and desperation and anti-sariness.
You know what's interesting is that every single fan of every single football club, regardless of the fortunes of their football club, has said that a week off has been a relief.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I would definitely agree with that.
But having said that, now that Southgate's given us the whole lot of England off back, it's actually quite enjoyable watching England.
He's just opened a can of worms,
yeah,
hasn't
he,
really?
Too,
this
hasn't
is the first
it?
Time Completely. I've watched two England games back to back.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
yeah. And I actually enjoyed it.
Actually, no, to be fair, I watched the highlights. I couldn't actually bear it. I recorded them and I fast-forwarded them a bit and I thought, oh, Jonathan, come on, you're not paying attention.
It's the
longueurs of football occasionally. If I don't really want to watch something, I will, or every throw-in, every goal kick, I'll just fast forward.
But that's cheating, Jonathan.
Yeah, I know.
You do that when you're at the games, to be fair.
In my mind. Well, I don't even watch the games, as you know.
So you get somebody to watch it on your behalf.
Somebody watches it, and they whisper in my ear. You know that for a fact. Yeah.
You do your own highlights package.
Oh, God, it's about 10 seconds. That's the trouble with it.
But when you say that Gareth has opened a can of worms, what do you mean?
Well, because he made a statement about him, how he was ready for England, and he actually said, and he actually gave him game time, and he played him from the very beginning. And Sarri watched him for 20 minutes, watched the game for 20 minutes, apparently.
Got some cigarettes.
I think the other thing, though, is, I mean, it's really interesting what Dan said, because I grew to loathe international football and international breaks, in England in particular, and I think a lot of that was to do with the fact that, you know, the more successful Chelsea got, the more grief. I mean, remember when Lampard and Terry and Cole were always booed and all of that? I just kind of had enough of it. And plus the fact they were rubbish and Chelsea were winning everything in sight. But actually,
was it that they were rubbish, or was it that England were just playing them in the wrong position?
No, England were rubbish.
England were terrible.
That's what I mean.
No, I agree.
The golden generation failed, as they were.
Yeah. But I think the fact is that I'm loving what Southgate's done. I love his approach. I love the fact that we had no idea he'd be any good. I love the fact that he's playing these kids and showing no fear. Yeah. And most of all, in a season where there has been an internecine war between Chelsea supporters about what is beautiful football and what isn't, he's playing beautiful football.
And he's playing what seems to be quite similar to the same structure. He's playing 4-3-3, isn't he?
Yeah.
And also,
playing Sarri ball.
No, but it was a joy to see Barkley,
wasn't it?
Play out
liberated.
Of his skin,
liberated,
completely liberated, absolutely bizarre.
No, you think,
hang on a second, this is the headless chicken who normally plays for us.
The lab who's stuck runs into the box, which we're missing.
Yeah. But you know, I find myself being constantly shifted from one foot to the other other in all our discussions all the time.
You're Sarri in, Sarri out, Sarri shake it all about.
Yeah, non-stop, exactly. Do the Sarri Koki. Yeah. And,
he arrived, the fourth or fifth goal away on last week, which is so Lampard-esque, just being at the right time in the right place to smash it in the back of the net.
Barkley made me look very, very silly because immediately before that game, I was doing the handover with Bell and Sperling, as I always do. And they said, what do you make of this England lineup? And I said, well, the name Barkley on an England team sheet doesn't inspire confidence in me. And then he was brilliant. And
but also, the thing is, he wouldn't have selected him unless he'd been playing very well in training, because he selected Odoi, because Odoi, so he said, just showed hit the ground completely running. So he does respond to that kind of situation. And, you know, hats off to Odoi, who clearly not got his finger out, but he just played as well as he could, which is absolutely the way it should be. And if Barkley in training is playing better than all the other options he's got, he's gonna stick him in. So he's somehow, we talked about straitjacket on the show all the time. I keep saying he's, you know, somehow he's managed to get out of it. But you wonder in the Cardiff game whether he'll be on orders again if he gets in, under orders to play the other way.
I feel really vindicated because we've been saying this all season that Barkley is not playing like the Barkley we know.
Yeah. We've seen at Everton. Yeah.
You know, he looks... I don't think he's the sharpest tool in the box, but he's all about, you know, spontaneity, inherent talent, I think. But I think he's a good lad. So I think when his manager tells him to play a certain way, he will do what he's told.
And according to Alex, steel-like buttocks.
Yes, yes. I hadn't really thought about
that. No, me neither. But no. Alex was very important because we watched him warming up one of the games, and she took photographs
she
of
did.
Him warming
well, she
up.
She would, wouldn't she?
Yeah, she
it's
would.
Everything
indeed.
I look for in an attacking midfielder.
But, you joke, but Ivanovic had fantastic
massive
buttocks.
Ass. Maybe
and,
this
and
is
Kenny
the...
Swain, who won the Champions League with Aston
Jonathan's
Villa.
Written a book about this.
Aston Villa. No, a small paragraph, but it's
Chelsea arses I have loved.
With big
font. Bottoms at the bridge.
Big font, so, you know, you have to, it's a letter, a page, you know.
Maybe
so,
that is the scouting criteria that Sarri's been missing all along.
That's it. That's what you've got to look
for. It's like fast bowlers' backsides.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Yeah. I feel like we've opened a
Fred Truman. Fred Truman had one of them. Yeah. He really did. It was there's a kind of stocky look, and so did Goffey. And Goffey and Tyson had one as well. Yeah,
was it that?
Yeah, Typhoon called Tyson.
Yeah, Frank Tyson.
That was his autobiography. This is going back to the 50s. It's going back when I worked Nipper, when I worked small.
Didn't they used to just kind of shout down a mine shaft and up would appear a great Yorkshire fast bowler?
Exactly.
Aye, they were the days.
And he'd been swinging to pick into pit. He'd been swinging it, and he'd come up and they'd go up. You'll do for us.
See you later.
Our producer is Northern.
See you later.
Our producer is Northern. Is looking very
excellent.
Bemused.
Let's carry on.
He knows. He's got his whippet with him. Tucked down to his trousers.
Has he got a flat cap on?
And a pint of John Smith's.
Anyway, moving swiftly on as we were. Where were we? You know, we're present here with Dan.
Dan hates
our manager.
Right.
Another hater. Another outer.
Dan goes from being sort of quietly tempered on Twitter and then suddenly comes up with a large, I hate this terrible man here and I get rid of him. And
pent up anger.
Yeah, there was that anger. But to be fair, after the Everton game, I think it was the second half.
Everybody was completely justified.
Yeah. But
I did that live on air, funnily enough.
Did you?
It was quite embarrassing, really.
And yet, we must come to the conclusion that if we have the transfer ban, he may very well still be the man in possession of the job.
God help us if that's
true. Yeah, no thanks.
But we'll see. Anyway, is there a competition?
Oh, God blimey, Jonathan, there is. I completely clean forgot what
it
was about.
It's because we started off speaking so beautifully
about you're making
him.
Me laugh so much. Completely forgot. I forgot who I was and where I am, not for the first time.
You're Dan, okay, Dan Silver.
The competition name, all Maurizio Sarri's trophies.
No, that's to be too quick, Dan, and everybody would know the answer. Yeah. No, the competition, strangely enough,
is...
Who played for both Chelsea and Cardiff City?
It's amazing, Chich.
No, you can't. You can say nothing. And I'll tell you why, because I could only find four. If you answer that correctly, you'd have already done 25% of the quiz.
Gordon Mulholland.
No, I don't know. No, the bottom line is there are only four that I found. But that does not mean that there were only four Chelsea players.
No, absolutely.
So actually, the challenge this week is to find more than four. So I'd love to know. So there you go.
Is there a prize?
No, but you get affirmation from us on the show.
That's prize enough.
Exactly. Yep. Phone us 0208 702558. Of course, tweet at Love Sport Radio or tweet at Chelsea Fancast.
I'm reliably informed that the winner will also get to glance at Ross Barkley's buttocks. So there is your prize.
We'll send you Alex's photographs.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and there is already argument in the studio about our quiz, which of course asks you to name all the players who played for both Chelsea and Cardiff. We're not quite at the punch-throwing stage yet, but we will keep you posted.
There's plenty of time, John. Don't worry about that.
If you'd like to get in touch with your answers, that number is, of course, 0208 70 20 558. And talking of phones, I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Liam Toomey, who is the Chelsea correspondent for ESPN, for our press report. Evening, Liam. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Obviously, very concerning scenes in the last week or so, as Callum Hudson-Odoi has again been exposed to racist chanting, and Maurizio Sarri has come up with quite a stern response to it, and rightly so.
Yeah, I mean, he said, I think football needs to do more. He wants to see a rule put in, not just for the Premier League, but for all of football, whereby if there is racist abuse from the stands, that the referee has the power to stop a match. You know, if one player or one of the teams complains of any kind of abuse of that kind from the stands, then they have the ability to stop the match for about 10 minutes on the first offence and see if that has any effect. And I mean, it doesn't seem like the worst idea. It's certainly, Sarri isn't the first person to suggest that. And it is clear that we need to do more to combat racism in football stadiums. But I think what's less clear, even among, you know, the people that are at the forefront of trying to combat this, is exactly how we go about it. It's not an easy issue to deal with.
Well, indeed, something stronger than what's happening already, Liam. And good evening, by the way, and thanks as ever for helping us out. I have to be honest, what I find equally disturbing was the fact that Sarri hadn't even spoken to Callum Hudson-Odoi about it. I mean, you know, surely his duties and duty of care and responsibilities as a manager mean that he should have had a chat with him. I think Pochettino certainly talked to Danny Rose. So what's he playing at?
It is odd. It is odd, and I think it's the latest example of Sarri's perception of his own job as being extraordinarily narrow. He was appointed as Chelsea head coach, and I think that's he's interpreted that role in the narrowest possible sense. I think he sees himself as a coach who works with players on the pitch, talks to them about tactical things and their positions and how they can improve and so on, and pretty much nothing else. So he's used the same sort of stock response before when asked about whether he's spoken to Hudson-Odoi about his future or to Eden Hazard about his future. You know, it's the same sort of deflection. I think he uses it to sort of bat away slightly bigger picture issues and try to focus on the football. And I don't necessarily know whether that comes from a bad place, but I think when you're using it to essentially deflect, taking an active role in dealing with an incident of racist abuse, I think it's not a great look for any head coach of a major European club.
You wonder whether he's had his fingers burnt, though. They have a lot of people with lots of jobs that seem to be set up to do exactly that. I mean, Gary Straker, I can't remember.
He's still there.
He's still there, and he's very much the player's representative.
Player liaison, isn't he?
Yeah. And you wonder, in fact, whether he may have said, don't worry, I'll deal with it. I mean, obviously, you think that somebody who's the manager would then go and have a word with the boy, but you wonder whether somebody says, hang on, this is my role within the setup.
Media outlets were saying that he'd been offered counselling, but we don't know who from or where that came from.
From a council.
Yeah.
But I mean,
the
club will have a whole bevy of counsellors. Yeah. Sadly, I'm not amongst them, but I think I might be somewhat conflicted if I was to have that role.
Slightly.
But particularly if it was a player I didn't like. You know. But anyway, we should move on, shouldn't we?
I think this goes to the heart of a slightly broader issue, which is obviously at elite clubs, you know, clubs as big as Chelsea, as Liverpool and Tottenham, there is an army of people, you know, in all manner of departments. And clearly, you know, even though Klopp and Pochettino might be the public face of these sorts of things, clearly they're not necessarily the ones directly dealing with them on the ground on a day-to-day basis. They'll be across it, obviously.
Of course.
But I think there's a growing expectation maybe on the managers of these huge clubs to be more than just managers, to be sort of like statesmen, to be sort of figureheads for their entire club. And I don't think Sarri sees himself like that.
Well, I agree. And I mean, look, you know, Liam, I've run companies, and if one of my staff had experienced something that was, you know, possibly quite traumatic, I would have made sure I had a chat with them to see how they were and offer some, you know, words of comfort at the very minimum, because coming from the guy who heads the organisation, that could mean quite a lot, and I'm surprised that he didn't. Anyway, talking of Hudson-Odoi, the other thing about it that struck me, we were talking about it a minute ago, funnily enough, is when he was asked, you know, had he seen Hudson-Odoi playing for England, and I think, you know, doing quite well, to be frank, he said he hadn't really. He'd only seen the 20 minutes that he wasn't very good in, or something along those lines. I might be misinterpreting it.
He said that, and basically there was only one other Chelsea player involved, was Giroud for France, so he could have quite easily watched the entire match.
I mean, was that out of order, Liam? I mean, you know, surely again, you know, if I'm Hudson-Odoi, I would have wanted my manager to see my debut for England.
I think it was another example of Sarri saying something which is actually consistent with what he said before. He's told us before that he has pretty much no time for international football. He thinks it's a lower level than club football and there isn't really anything to learn from it. But it's an example of him saying something consistent with what he said before, but not considering or just not caring how his comments might be perceived or interpreted. And I think, you know, it's very valid to say, well, what's Hudson-Odoi going to think when he sees those comments of, you know, the proudest moment of his career so far, probably, or at least right up there with his Chelsea debut, and his manager, you know, couldn't really be bothered to even even if he hadn't watched the whole game, couldn't even be bothered to lie and say that he had.
Do you think maybe
or feign more interest?
Sure. Well, do you think decisions being made already, and Sarri knows he's on the way out, end of the season? He's like, well,
but Sarri said he isn't.
Well, perhaps he knows that Odoi's on the way out.
No, maybe that Sarri's on the way out, and that's he's like, well, you know what, I was going to go through the motions between now and May, and that's it.
Or just not going to give a damn.
Yeah, and maybe decisions being made, you're gone. Because, you know, Odoi's got more value to club than Sarri, in my opinion.
Well, I think there's a more general issue at play here, which is that that Sarri is frustrated and has been frustrated for the whole duration of this Hudson-Odoi saga. That essentially, I get the impression from everything that he said and the way he's acted when questions about Hudson-Odoi put to him, that he resents the idea that Hudson-Odoi is being made to be a special case by, you know, by the media, by Chelsea fans on social media, by, you know, he feels that there's a lot of pressure, and he dresses it up as pressure on Hudson-Odoi.
But Liam, what if he is a special case? I mean, if he's an unusual talent to a special extent, then shouldn't he be treated in a special way?
Well, that's certainly one counter argument, and I'd also say he's a special case. Even leaving his talent aside, and clearly he's an exceptionally talented young footballer, he's a special case because this is an unprecedented situation for any top club. I think we're in uncharted territory here, where an 18-year-old in his camp, I think, have very cleverly navigated this situation to a position of unparalleled leverage, where he's entering the final year of his contract. He's basically, I think, the minutes that he's got this season, he have kind of been leveraged minutes. He's been putting pressure on the club to give him more opportunities by this refusal to sign a new contract. And the one element that no one really planned on, least of all Chelsea, was Bayern Munich coming in very, very publicly in January and offering to make him one of the most expensive teenagers in the history of the game. So now Chelsea are in a position, and Sarri is in a position which I actually sympathise with him for, because there isn't really anything that can prepare you for this. There's no previous examples to go on, and Sarri, you know,
he's stubborn,
is entitled
as we've worked
to feel,
out, haven't we? He's a very stubborn man, but Sarri, and so he's unlikely to have pressure to be put on him. So
he's entitled to, as every previous Chelsea coach, you know, before him, to prioritise immediate results, because he knows that if he doesn't get fourth, he won't get a second seed.
Yeah.
And if he feels that Willian and Pedro are the best way to go about that, you know, you can disagree.
But I still think it was really disingenuous, because he comes out with that line. Well, I can only play two wingers. Well, you could play one that's in better form than one of the other two, to be frank. So that's just wrong, in my opinion.
Well, and the most disingenuous thing about all of it, I think, is when the bit where he claimed that Hudson-Odoi not not starting a Premier League game was only chance and that all the competitions are the same to him. That's clearly not true. There's clearly a hierarchy. He clearly has a Europa League team and a Premier League team. And when you look at the actual number of meaningful minutes that Hudson-Odoi has been given by Sarri since the turn of the year, it's only a little bit more than the 90 minutes that Southgate gave him against Montenegro. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think that even the minutes he gave him in the semi-final and final of the League Cup, you could, if you were being cynical, and I'm half inclined to make this argument, you say it says more about Sarri's opinion of the League Cup than his opinion of Hudson-Odoi.
I'm just going to say one other thing, actually, about that. I mean, you know, Sarri's stubbornness here, you know, it's not just that. I mean, I'm just going to ask you, do any of you lot call him out on that? You know, it's a bit like it sounds like you're doing a press conference with Donald Trump, you know, just clearly saying, you know, ridiculously stupid things and just hoping that none of you are going to fact check him or call him out on that.
Well, look, I think generally, sports journalism is not, you know, sports journalism is not political journalism. It's not
true.
It's not that innately confrontational. Football press conferences are not generally confrontational, which is why it's newsworthy when they are.
True.
And, you know, I think, you know, everyone has a slightly different interpretation of what our job is. But the way I've always seen it is that we put the questions that we feel need to be asked, and then you judge the manager by their response.
Right.
You know, I've never seen a huge amount of value in trying to get involved in shouting matches with managers.
Well, you've got to work with them all season, haven't you? You know, so I get
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I prefer to ask the question, and then you know their response is a matter of public record, and people can take it and judge it as they like.
I was intrigued to see that his father was the agent. We were led to believe it was his brother. Oh. His agent's one of the brother. Oh. And his father's name is Bismarck.
Bismarck.
And he's been named after
the
Prussian unificator
president.
Of Germany.
El Presidente.
He made himself that after, I think, after he'd unified Germany. Yeah. So
he
had an iron fist, didn't he? So,
We digressed.
Yeah.
Again.
JK, Callum's father and his brother are basically his two key advisors.
Okay.
They both have a big role.
No, completely, absolutely.
And they'll certainly... Yeah, I think his dad is the one that is primarily... You know, I wouldn't even say steering this future, because I'm sure Callum's making his own decisions one way or the other. But I reckon his dad is probably the most influential in the process. But, of course, his brother's going to have a pretty big voice as well. Especially because his older brother, you know, came through a Premier League academy. He was a youngster at Fulham, quite highly regarded at one point. Didn't become a top level footballer, but has had a long career and knows how the game works. So,
do you think that familial involvement is potentially a worry for Chelsea, Liam? In the sense that we've seen with Marko Arnautović at West Ham, his agent is his brother Daniel, and a lot of West Ham fans basically see him as interfering and trying to force a move to China in January. Do you think that these arrangements where we see a player's family very closely involved with their transfer dealings ever end particularly well?
I think it can, yeah. I honestly don't see much of a difference in terms of good agents that are family versus bad agents that are family and good agents that are just agents. You know, I mean, we look at, you know, someone like Mino Raiola is a very controversial figure and he's always in the public eye. You can, and it's clearly a divisive conversation as to whether or not he's a good agent or not. I'd argue he probably does a very good job for his clients. But when it comes to family, I think it all depends on, it all depends on competence, really. And the one advantage that you can generally have with family is that they usually have their client's best interests at heart because they're related to them. And I'd also be slightly wary about what comes out of clubs with relation to, you know, agents that happen to be family, because it's all a PR war, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, Hudson-Odoi's father and brother don't owe anything to Chelsea.
Yeah.
They're
mm-hmm.
they're looking out for their brother and for their son, for their brother. And if they decide that his future is best served at Bayern Munich or elsewhere, and they're going to do what it takes to get him there, then it's their perfect right to make that decision, really.
Well, Liam, it sounds like I'll have to get my brother on board to negotiate my next contract. Yeah. Lovely talking to you. Liam Toomey there, Chelsea correspondent for ESPN. Don't go anywhere, because coming up, we'll be talking about Giroud and Barkley.
This is Love Sport.
The Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and the guys from the Chelsea Fan Cast. It's Stamford Chidge, Jonathan Kidd and Dan Silver. We've got a caller on the line. Yannick is getting in touch from Surrey. Yannick, I gather you want to talk about Barkley and Giroud.
Yeah, evening, gents.
Evening, mate. You okay?
I'm well. How are you boys doing?
Yeah, we're good, thank you.
Excellent. I was hoping you'd all do something in barbershop there together.
we could, if you like, after three.
Only if you pay us, though, yeah.
What should we sing?
Hello.
Yeah, well,
hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, okay. One, two, three.
Hello. 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 Is that better?
There you go. That's why I'm a special guest.
Anyway, bye, Yannick. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for your time, Yannick. Have a nice day.
Brilliant.
I do want to get your boys' take on Giroud and Barkley, but quickly, I was listening to Liam talk to you guys there. A really interesting lot of things he had to say. Just quickly, on Callum, personally, I actually feel his game time and competitions and whatever, I feel like he's been handled perfectly if it was organic, but as Liam quite rightly said, it's due to leverage from his camp and the player and stuff. Like, if this was all natural that we pulled him out of the academy because he's a world-class wonder kid and we gave him these said minutes, there'd be no issue. Mm-hmm. It's just all the sort of narrative and drama. Like, Jose or Conte wouldn't have plucked him out as a teenager and played him in the first team.
I agree. They wouldn't have played him at all. Absolutely agree.
Well, yeah and I do sympathise with Sarri a little bit because he's not a coach that plays youth generally, which hasn't served him well in this instance, but he's also a coach that doesn't really play youth, and he's playing a kid, and you know, he's happy with it, but I feel like he's getting a bit of a hard time of it all. But anyway,
good point, Yannick.
Yeah, thank you. I want to get your gents' take on probably mainly Giroud, because scored a perfect hat-trick for us in the Europa League with an assist to boot.
Great booted assist.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just literally thinking of that of that pun I did accidentally. Anyway, also scoring for France in consecutive games in a very good French team, you know, functioning well for them. I do really like Giroud. I think you said in the show before, he's become a little bit of like a sort of short-term cult hero
for
the Chelsea fans. But then again, as a bit of a football nerd, I've always loved Higuain. And even though he's a little bit over the hill, well, I think he's the same age as Giroud, if not a year younger, saying that. But I really like him as a player, stylistically, and we've seen a couple of the goals he scored for us were absolutely blinding, and we've seen him make those refreshing runs that we haven't seen from a Chelsea striker for a while. You know, even if it's just on the shoulder, straight down the middle, but he just keeps making those runs. I really like the look of him, but I don't know who I'd want to start now. I wanted to get your fellas' takes on it.
For me, the man in form at the moment is Giroud. And our main talisman, Eden Hazard, prefers playing with Giroud. So surely that's a
good point.
You know,
that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, the goals that he's got, a couple against Huddersfield, which kind of, you know, they're not really goals because Huddersfield is such a bad team at the moment. I'd like
Giroud. Fulham,
yeah. Good, but, yeah. I mean, listen, he's a Surrey boy. He's made some great runs, but he's also been disappointing.
He doesn't seem to be influenced by form much, Surrey, though, does he? That's the trouble.
Surrey's got his favourites.
Have taken that whole of that Europa League side out and stuck it against Everton, and they probably would have done better than we did in the whole of the 90 minutes. All these players
are supreme athletes. Their entire clock is trained by these performance coaches, food coaches, fitness coaches, the flights. He could have come back and done 70 minutes against Everton, Giroud, and then being subbed. I just a player scores a hat trick, and you know, albeit against an inferior opposition.
But it's stubbornness again. It's stubbornness.
But that's the whole point.
But also, were they playing Sarismo against Kiev? They were pressing hugely. I think it's important though, because Higuain just can't seem to deal with it, even though he's the man you'd have thought could actually play in that system.
Dan's nailed it. I mean, you know, most managers, you would like to think, would select their teams based on form. You know, we always say it when we get a bit, you know, cross and angry about players not being picked. We always reel back and say, oh, yeah, yeah. But we don't see them in training.
Yeah.
You have to respect the manager's decision there.
Yeah.
But, you know, clearly Oliver Giroud, on the back of a hat-trick, and for the likes of Hazard, you know, being able to play with Hazard, perhaps better than Higuain, you would have thought he would have picked him. Or another manager might actually go, you know, I tell you what, we're really struggling for goals at the moment. Why don't we play Higuain and Giroud together? Well, he's not going to do it because he goes 4-3-3.
No, very few teams play two up front at all.
True enough.
That's the thing, which is, you know.
But that would be, you know, Juventus a team that's lacking goals. Like, it Hazard in a truly free number 10 role behind two strikers that have got different playing attributes in Higuain and Giroud. They are different. It does sound appealing, but functionality, it might not work.
But it's a different system completely, isn't it, Yannick?
Well, exactly. But not to blow more smoke up Dan, because he said something else that was interesting and probably...
No, you do. He doesn't get it enough, Yannick.
Come on. Blow that smoke. Come on.
Well, he's got me a ticket for the football, so...
You can blow the smoke up then.
Inside job, mate.
Yeah, but... What you did say, Dan, is about how Hazard likes playing with Giroud. I think Antoine Griezmann said something similar recently for France. People do love playing with him, and for a team that may be failing a bit systemically, and regardless to how like people might laugh about Sarri's mentality comments, it's clearly an issue within the players. So if you've got a player that you trust more on the pitch, that you enjoy playing with more, surely that can only enforce a positive there, and you know, start. When wingers start bouncing balls, you know, Hazard could be 1-2-ing with him, bouncing the ball off him. And then, if you know, God forbid we do play Hudson-Odoi, if he plays on the right, he can whip in a cross and Giroud loves a header. So, you know, maybe the decision's made up. You've helped me come to my decision of Giroud over Higuain.
But the perspective of all this has been our wins against Kiev and Huddersfield, which have probably been our most convincing wins of the season, have been against massively inferior opposition. So, because after the Kiev game, I said, "Well, yeah, it's great. We've beaten a team of a very young team of farmers and 5-0." So it wasn't it wasn't necessarily a true reflection on where Chelsea are. Huddersfield are going to get relegated this weekend, most likely, and they're just going to beat Derby's record of 14 points. So we are where we are because a culmination of many factors, which could be an entire show of its own making. You know, when we playing some, maybe the Spurs win 2-0 aside, we play some with decent teams. We've been hopeless, absolutely hopeless, irrespective of whether it's been Giroud or what's his face? I forgot his name now.
Higuain
up front. You know, 5-0 against Huddersfield, 5-0 against Kiev. Yes, it's a great win, but the perspective is they're poor sides, and you'd expect Chelsea to beat them, even with
He's made his mind up because he only plays with about 13 players, doesn't he, Sarri? So he's decided the 13 players are the following.
And there's this thing about Kepa as well. In fairness, most of the games that Chelsea play, we don't actually give up that much in our offensive third because everyone sits back against us. So the occasional counter-attack, the chances are that Kepa's not going to make that many saves because no one attacks us. We're the easiest team to play against in the Premier League.
I'm very happy with Kepa.
So am I. I mean, he hasn't really had a chance to prove himself because every time we play a team like Wolves, they barely had an attack. And as soon as they got the counter-attack, deflected goal, 1-0 down. So, his stats are a bit misleading.
I mean, he's done enough for me in terms of... he's demonstrated his ability and quick cat-like reflexes.
We've seen the
confidence on the boy. There's been a couple of mix-ups because he's still quite young. Confidence of playing out with the back and good distribution. But I did want to also ask you chaps about Barkley. In the last three games for England, he's been excellent. Right back to the win against Spain, the 3-2, when he suddenly turned into Pirlo and played that ball to Harry Kane. And,
let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, the Scouse Pirlo.
I mean, come on, Yannick, come on. He hasn't even got a beard, mate.
Yeah. Steady on. I did a Photoshop a while ago when Barkley was in that purple patch for us mid-season. I was playing on Photoshop. I did a little thing with a big number 8 graphic and him and Lampard either side of it, and I got absolutely torn to pieces.
Can you understand why, Yannick?
just naive on Twitter, really.
I know.
Like many Chelsea fans, I think Ruben's got too much to not have him starting in that space. But if he's got a bad back and his fitness is not up, would you chaps?
Well, I mean,
because I was definitely
play Barkley and Loftus-Cheek, either side of whoever's in the middle. Okay, Jorginho.
Birthday boy gets left out then.
Oh, of course, Kante. But I'll tell you what, play Kante instead of Jorginho then. There we go, that'll work.
But he doesn't. He's never played in a single base. But
therein lies the problem again. He'll never do it. He's too stubborn.
For Kante, in all his successful positions, he's either been in a 2 or a 3.
How did he do against? How did he do for France this week, Yannick?
Man of the match, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he. I don't know, was he playing at the base of a midfield?
Yeah, he's playing where he should be playing.
Yeah.
Right, okay, because in the World Cup, if you looked like where the space he was occupying, he never played in like a pivot role. And, you know, for Chelsea and Leicester and stuff, he was always in the two. So, I don't know. Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, that would be probably the most sensible thing, wouldn't it? It would be play a system that affords Kante to be in a two as a box to box with someone that gets rid of the ball like a drink water, like a Fabregas. Oh, we've got Jorginho.
You go 4-2-3-1. You have Kante and Jorginho, front three, and then a striker. That's what this team is set up for. Not 4-3-3.
Exactly, and you could have Hazard in a 10, a free roll where he runs about, and then you could have Hudson-Odoi and Pedro. Or William.
This team is set up to play like that, not 4-3-3. Yeah. Boring.
Yeah. Or Ruben in the 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ruben in the 10. Hazard on the left. Yeah.
Not go anywhere. So that's the problem with it. It doesn't. They're supposed to be an end product. They don't deliberately pass the ball sideways just to frustrate the opposition.
Jonathan is Sarri's sole defender in this studio.
No, I understand what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
He just can't do it with these players.
Oh, yeah. I champion the concept.
That's the truth, though. I understand, Dan. I think he's terrible.
But
you do. You do. You tweet about it all the time.
Yeah, I think he's terrible because every manager has got a philosophy. And they are able. Pep Guardiola's got a philosophy, but he can tweak a game, he can change a game. In-game management is brilliant. Sarri is so belligerent, narrow-minded.
That doesn't prevent me from understanding what he's trying to do.
I totally understand it. I did see Napoli last season, so I did get what he's playing at. But at the moment, he hasn't got the tools to do it. So adapt your game.
Indeed.
Adapt your game, and then next season, if he's get the chance, then play Sarri. But right now, he hasn't got the tools for it. That's my argument.
The narrative here is people getting really simplistic and then sensationalist about everything. Really, systemically, his style of football is really compelling, it's interesting, and provided it's executed appropriately, it's incredibly hard to break.
But that provided, Yannick, is the important part.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not championing Sarri anymore. I'm just saying that this football got the world's attention because it was refreshing. Some people came up with a word to call it that he didn't, and he maintains he thinks it's ridiculous. But it's the world that looked at it and said, look, this is fantastic.
He wanted Maurizio,
man. So conceptually, and in theory, that with Chelsea's finances and backing would sounded like a great concept.
Well, Yannick, it could still work. Lovely talking to you. Yannick calling in from Surrey there. Dave Chidgey is shaking his head at me, possibly rightly. The first test coming up for Sarri is, of course, against Cardiff at the weekend. And we're still asking for your responses to our quiz, which is to name all the players who played for both Cardiff and Chelsea. You can get in touch on 0208 7020 558 or at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
This is Love Sport.
In modern football, we often see teams complete a transfer before the window is even open. Scandalous. One such deal is, of course, the move of Christian Pulisic to Chelsea from Dortmund. But he's managed to get injured before he's even arrived at the Bridge.
That's trouble with international football, Johnny. Shouldn't be allowed, really.
Is it a bad injury?
I'm not sure. I mean, the
is
Yanks
it his
will
ego?
Know.
Has
if any of the Yanks are listening,
ego?
Because I know we know you all love him, really, ring up and tell us. They would have probably watched the match.
Is it a metatarsal?
I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, I had a lot of international football to watch this last week, so I didn't even have 20 minutes to watch the USA play, so I didn't actually see him get injured.
So he scored the goal in a 1-1 draw with Chile, was then taken off. It's a muscle injury. It's looking like 3 or 4 weeks out.
Oh, so I'm impressed.
It's on his screen.
Oh, you just
it is on my screen.
I didn't know that. I'm a
spoiler. I can see everything.
You're a spoiler.
So he cheated all the time.
All the time.
And I was bigging him up.
Yeah.
Oh, blimey.
Spoiler.
It's lucky Jonathan can see my screen, or there'll be all kinds of things going on.
You're right. I mean, that's quite a long way for Jonathan and his aged eyes these days.
To see. I'm not seeing. I'm just seeing a football. I'm presuming it's
Pulisic. Okay. Anyway, so he's out for 3 or 4 weeks. That's not serious.
That's not a serious injury. I mean, it's not like an ACL or something.
Let's not panic yet.
But how are you looking at him more broadly? I mean, we're having these ongoing rows.
Cha-ching.
Well, I have no idea how he plays.
But
he doesn't get in the Dortmund side.
He does get in the Dortmund side.
No, and Sancho gets in ahead of him. Yeah. What does that tell you?
But Sancho's better.
Yeah,
why don't we buy him instead?
Well, Sancho, I think, would have set you back a fair bit more.
I should say.
We've still got this argument going on about Callum Hudson-Odoi. It's looking like he will probably still be at Stamford Bridge next season.
Who says?
Most people this week, including Sarri.
Definitely.
He'll most likely let him go on free.
Did you not
150,000 a week?
Well, quite possibly. Yeah. Did you hear Christensen's comments this week?
No.
I think he let the cat out of the bag somewhere.
Oh.
Well, this is the other good thing about the international.
What kind of cat was it?
Well, if you be quiet, I'll tell you.
What was the bag?
If you be quiet.
Was it a hold all?
If you just zip your mouth, I will tell you. No, apparently he was saying that he had been told that nobody is allowed to leave this summer because of the impending transfer ban. So either he's kind of spoken out of turn, which is interesting, and I think he may have well been doing it because that includes him, and I think he was quite keen on
going. Well,
does
that mean they stay even though the contract will run out? They'd rather have them stay
because,
and
then leave
for nothing.
Because they can't replace them.
Absolutely.
And that's the key. So, you know, let's face it, Chelsea, okay, they stand to lose a lot of... They stand to lose what? Let's say $75 million on Hazard.
However, they might earn that money by finishing further.
Well, maybe, yeah. But they lose $75 million on Hazard. They'll lose another... I mean, they might lose $100, $150 million out of it. But let's face it, they can probably wear it. You know, I mean, if they were another club, they might not be able to. And maybe that's...
Well, if they're in the Europa League again, it might mean they advance and they make that,
who knows, make that money back.
Yeah.
But I'm beginning to think that they might well keep hold of them. I really am.
That's my thinking as well.
And I mean, there's also a negotiating chip here, isn't there? There's like, look, you know, we'll let you go for free. You can get more money from whoever you're going to, you know.
But then by then he might have thought, well, actually, I'm in the first team. I'm playing regularly. I'll just sign another contract.
Who knows? But I mean, I'm talking about Hazard as well, of course.
Oh, okay. Right.
You know, who knows? But I mean, that's my interpretation of it. I'd be interested to hear what Johnny
says.
Johnny's done research, you see.
No, I agree with you in terms of that. I think the expectation this week has to be that Callum Hudson-Odoi will stay, at least for one more year. With that in mind, if you do end up with Hudson-Odoi and Pulisic...
And Sarri,
crucially, Jonathan, we are already seeing this situation, right, where one young winger can't get in the team. So he's going to have another one. Is Pulisic going to play any football?
In the Europa League.
But no, all of the competitions are the same to Sarri, Jonathan.
Pulisic,
he doesn't prioritise.
It's a commercial signing to a big extent because they're trying to
just to sell shirts in America.
He's a big deal in America. Pulisic just come to Chelsea and suddenly, like, you know, they gain X thousands of new fans, sell some shirts, people come and watch him.
Are they really that cynical?
Yeah, of course they are. Yes. Oh, hell yeah.
Football's changed so much. It's about money now. Money.
But he is also rated incredibly highly, right? And we have seen it in the past in the case of, say, Park Ji-sung when he went to United, where we hear reports that a player's being signed just for commercial reasons because they're from a certain part of the world. And while that might be an element, they can turn up and still actually be really good.
Heung-min Son at Spurs is an outstanding player.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's come from... Did he come from Dortmund as well?
He came from Bayer Leverkusen.
Bayer Leverkusen, yeah. I mean, he's a talented player, but again, he's young. And personally speaking, I'd rather, you know, promote Callum if I was given the choice.
So with that, do you think that the club can't or won't do both?
Well, the issue is you've got Pedro and William, both the wrong side of 30, and wingers necessarily don't have, you know, once they get their pace goes, they're not as, you know, crucial as they were. So maybe he's thinking, like, long-term, you know, Callum, Pulisic will come into
Pedro,
a place.
Gets worse, it's that he seems to run around like...
He's inconsistent.
Like Duracell bunny in sort of for a burst,
I mean,
and then falls over.
I remember the time when he try and defend his own half and gave away a corner with some awful defending.
But you know what? You know, so somebody needs to get the managers to read the memo, you know, that if Chelsea don't like keeping players who are over 30 or giving them contracts longer than a year, that means that they'd rather have under 30s playing.
Yes.
Somebody should tell the manager
that. Rather than try to get them to get
because actually,
players
and
in.
I'm not, this is not for those of you listening, tweeting me rude stuff about me being anti-Sarri. This is not just about Sarri. Conte tried to basically buy loads of over 30s.
Bonucci,
Mourinho,
Chiellini.
Yeah, Mourinho was no different.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these managers do it. And here's the thing. Nothing will change at this club until the person running it say it is as important to us for you to bring and develop and put through young players at this club as it is to win trophies. And your job will not be on the line if you don't win a trophy.
Do you think that it might be that he is saying this to the rest of the board? He's saying, I want these players to play. And the manager is giving them friction by not wanting it. No, we never know. But I'm just intrigued as
well, I'll tell you what we do
why
know.
That we know
we,
that... Yeah,
we do know that Roman Abramovich does not go into the dressing room anymore.
He's not even there anymore.
Exactly. But we know that he used to.
Yeah, regularly. He used to go to the matches as well.
He's not been in the country,
but
so it's
no, but he can't get to the dressing room if he's not turning
so
up
I,
to the
I would, matches. I would therefore suspect no, but I have no idea. None of us do. Not even Blue Squirrel knows the answer to that one.
No. I suspect. Blue Squirrel's been very quiet with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
do squirrels normally
talk? Oh, no, this is, sorry, Blue Squirrel is our source. Like Deep Throat, but it's Blue Squirrel.
Blue Squirrel. Yeah. And
I was Blue Thong for a bit, but it didn't work very well.
No, near Ross Barkley or not?
It's only because he had...
Nowhere near Ross.
He had photographs of himself in a Blue Thong. That's why it didn't work very well.
Well, if you'd like to see those, get in touch on 0208.
It's actually Chidge, it's not me.
Well, I am shocked. One man who I'm sure has never worn a Blue Thong is Gonzalo Higuain. In just a moment. This is Love. It is the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And normally, when a player retires from international duty, there's this perfect mixture of happiness and sadness. There's a sorrow that the career is over, but a delight at the joy that the fans have brought him, a thanks to have received the great honour of representing his nation. Not so in the case of a certain Mr. Gonzalo Higuain, whose statement on his announcement of international retirement, which came today, is fairly extraordinary, Mr. Chidge.
I mean, I remember, because I've got a very good friend who works in the media in Italian football. The good old Sheridan Bird, who was on the first Chelsea Fancast ever, by the way, nearly 11 years ago. And I had a really good chat with him before Higuain turned up, because he'd written a very interesting article in one of the main papers about Higuain. And one of the things that he said was that the trouble with Higuain, who's really, really excellent and very, very good, but might be a bit past his sell-by date, that sound familiar at all? But apparently he quite often missed a lot of really easy chances in massive games.
Particularly for Argentina, the World Cup final.
Exactly, particularly for Argentina, but also for his club side. I mean, he's known for it. And lo and behold, he's retired from Argentina, apparently. Retired from international duty this week. But we were just talking about this off air. He's reeled off this absolute diatribe.
It's absolutely spectacular.
absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to read the whole thing. It'd take too long. But he's basically saying that nobody cares. The people only remember the goals he's missed, and nobody cares about the ones he's scored. And he's gone through hell because of it, and he's suffered for the national team, but nobody cares about that. And basically that he's not going to be playing anymore. He'll be watching from the outside, and everybody will be delighted by it.
I actually think it's sad. It is unbelievable, and it's hilarious because you think you're a grown man and you've had a really spectacular career at the international level as well. He's missed chances, but as he's saying, he's scored bags of goals for Argentina. Yeah. But surely it is petty and a shame to, at the point where you retire, go, well, you were never nice to me anyway, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, in a weird way, it's kind of refreshingly honest as well. I actually quite admire that.
I do kind of like that kind of brutal honesty about it. You know, I've scored almost one in two international levels, but you don't
Has he really? Has
he really? 31 and 75.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
It's a very good record.
Yeah. But you see, that's the thing about Argentina. And I think that maybe that'd be a lesson to us all, you see, because their expectations are to win World Cups. And if you've missed goals in World Cup semi-finals like he did, they don't forget.
But
that.
He missed in the final.
And he missed in the final too.
Of course,
they
lose that game in extra time. Yeah. So I think in Argentina, they view Higuain as this guy who cost them the World Cup. Which...
Frankly, he's lucky they didn't string him up. You know, that's the kind of thing they'd do out there. They don't suffer defeat very well, do they?
Isn't that Venezuela?
Yeah, they're not very...
Colombia. No, I think Colombia. The occasion where it actually happened was in Colombia, where
Escobar.
Very
awful.
And that was a knockout stage as well, wasn't it?
Brilliant film about that, isn't there?
That, by the way, wasn't a case of fans not taking defeat. That was actually a gang-related bet scenario where his own goal had cost someone a lot of money. Obviously tragic, and I'm sure Higuain...
Brilliant film. Go and watch it.
I will have to. I'm sure Higuain is safe from all of that, regardless of any chances he missed. But as Chelsea fans, does this mean anything particular to you? Do you look at this and question his character, or are you just quite amused?
Well, he's always had a bit of a character.
He said that he's putting all his energy into playing for Chelsea. So that
so you're delighted?
I'm absolutely delighted, because at the moment it's not working as well as it ought
until
to be,
May.
Considering he's the infernal goal machine.
Are you a bit worried about the fact that he also said it's very competitive indeed?
Yeah, and he likes it, though, he said. But I think, possibly he's not...
It's a bit harder than I thought it would be, the translation,
Well, in brackets, I'm not sure I'm quite up to it.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
I'd like him to be, because I want to see him score some great goals.
We've seen glimpses of it. I mean,
he doesn't pull the trigger enough.
Well, but when he has pulled the trigger, he looks like a natural striker, and that encourages me.
Yeah,
but there you go.
Yeah, I'm encouraged as well.
And at least at Chelsea, he won't have the chance to miss a chance in the World Cup final, at the very least.
No, he won't. But there are plenty of other opportunities, like a Europa Cup final, maybe, or a semi-final, or the... the key game in the run-in, which would mean we get into top four. So he's got plenty of opportunities for that.
Stopping
yet.
Liverpool in the league at Anfield.
Yeah, you know, there's all sorts of opportunities yet. You know, he's got time, Johnny.
Do you have faith in him as
not
a striker?
Really.
Do you not?
No.
You don't think he's still learning?
No. I've got very little faith in the entire squad at the moment, if I'm honest.
Yeah. I mean, I feel for him, but he was brought in to be the saviour of Sarri in the season.
He was.
And not his fault. He's getting a bit old. It takes some players a long time to adjust the Premier League. He hasn't really had the time, but it's not worked, has it?
But he does run some good lines, though.
Yeah, but he doesn't not picks him out. That's a problem.
No, that's right.
I mean, the only time I think was it Jorginho's pass... Was it the Kiev match with that lovely pass over the top and he took a really bad, heavy first touch?
Yeah.
That's what he can do.
Well, I'm afraid that's the end of the cycle of us talking about Gonzalo Higuain, to the joy of many people.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live, it's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great! But I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all... No more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Love Sport. This is Love Sport.
To Blue Day.
Blue Day?
Yeah, it's gone.
It's gone. We'll have it back.
He won't get his royalties now.
Oh, we'll sort it out, Jonathan, I promise you.
I'll give you 20p later.
Yes. You are listening to the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Stamford Chidge, Jonathan Kidd, and Dan Silver from the Chelsea Fancast. We had a tricky moment over the news. We had to deal with a phone call from a tearful Gonzalo Higuain, but he's been put to bed now and is fine. If you'd like to get in touch, it's 0208 7020 558 or at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. And now to the big, big question, lads. Can Chelsea get top four?
Well, ostensibly, one would say... It's going to be blooming well difficult. I think the real problem is that we just don't know which Chelsea's going to turn up. But with eternal credit to the wonderful Rick Glanville and others who do this pre-match briefing thing on the Chelsea website, I found a really brilliant analysis of it. You know, I did one the other week. Well, mine's rubbish because theirs is clever.
Yeah,
because basically they've done like a form guide thing. And basically, we're in trouble, really, because we are... sixth in terms... Actually, no, there's only one team above us, really, Fulham. That's in worse form than us. No, I'm talking about the top six.
Right.
And that's Spurs, who have kind of melted down. But it's really quite intriguing. I mean, basically, it goes into, well, it's really going to be a question of whether you're playing at home or away, and then who are you playing? If you're playing people who are challenging for places in the top six, then that's going to be harder. But also, if you... are challenging people who are facing relegation, that's going to be hard. So ideally, you would want 8 games against Leicester. But you're not going to get them, you know.
We've just got the one against them, haven't we?
I think, have we got Leicester?
Yeah, last,
we have,
last
haven't
game
we?
Of the
oh,
season.
It's the last game of the season, isn't it? Yeah. When, of course, it'll all be done and dusted.
Well, I think that we'll get 11 points.
Well, they reckon the maximum week... Well, this is the other thing. Have a look at that.
Yeah.
The maximum we can get is 81. And everybody above us... the maximum they can get is clearly above what we can get. Although we are close to United. I mean, we've got a chance of catching either United, Arsenal and possibly Spurs. So we need one.
You could catch all of those teams. 4 points is not unassailable.
I know, because we're only 4 points behind Arsenal. Though Arsenal have got... Arsenal apparently have got the easiest run-in, but they've got the worst away record of anybody in the top seven. And they've got to go away to Wolves, Everton and Watford.
But this is presuming that we play well.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
You know, after the Everton game, with a complete capitulation in the second half, it doesn't matter how well we play in the first half, when we were excellent again.
Yeah.
But you can't score if you can't score. Yeah. And you defend lousily at corners or at set pieces. Yep. You've had it.
Yeah, exactly that.
So I think we're going to get 11 points from that and finish sixth.
Well, yeah, I think we're going to finish sixth.
I think our best chance of Champions League is to win the Europa League, if I'm honest.
Which I have to say,
fighting talk.
No, but I think we'll play Arsenal in the final and we'll lose.
I don't think Arsenal will go.
Not fighting talk.
No. I think we'll play Napoli in the final.
You will play Napoli
in the final and we'll lose.
We'll get Napoli in the final and Sarri will do Benitez and throw it.
He'll cry.
Because he loves Napoli more than us.
Too emotional for him to deal with.
Yeah. Well, on the Sarri front, one man who's weighing in on this issue is Mark, who's called into the show from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeehaw.
It's a long way, Mark. Welcome. Thanks very much for your call. I'm reliably informed that you're a Sarri fan, but that you have some concerns, as I think we all do.
Yes. Afternoon, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
All right, mate. Good to hear you.
I'm doing well. Before I start, I'm going to need you guys to quit slagging off my boy Pulisic. He's more than a player. He can play.
It's because we don't know, you see.
I know. I know. To be fair, Mark, I did say he's a decent player. What more do you want? Blood?
You said he was a shirt signing deal.
No. I didn't know that. That was Dan.
That was me, my friend. Listen, when I see you for the football match and give you a ticket, then you can have a go at me in real time.
he'll be wearing a Chelsea Pulisic shirt.
I'll
it'll
give
be
you
easy
a
to
hug
spot
then.
Him.
I definitely won't go with you. I'll give you a hug.
That's brilliant.
So basically about Sarri, when the season started, there were two ways I thought the season could go, which it could be somewhat successful. One was do what most managers do. They play with the team they have and go all out and try to win. Or he could have tried his style and integrate the players who I feel are going to be here for more than 1 or 2 years. And I think when he got into trouble was when he kind of mixed the two, where he said, okay, I'm going to keep playing my style, but I'm not going to play the younger players. And for me, that's when I became somewhat nervous about Sarri, because we weren't getting the results. And he was losing the fan support. I honestly believe if he played Callum Moore, RLC Moore, and Christensen, if we were in this exact same spot, I think the fans would have a much more favorable view of him than what he has now. Because, you know, you say, okay, we're losing, but at least we're working towards something. As to where he keeps picking the same players, and they're probably not going to be here more than 1 or 2 years, even with the transfer ban. And for me, I think that's where his biggest mistake is as a coach. What do you guys think?
Well, I'm inclined to agree, actually, with that. Although I think there are other things going on as well. And I think, look, I've written about this many times, but the bottom line is Chelsea supporters are, if anything, they are pragmatic. We don't believe in philosophies at all. And when you have a manager who's stubborn and won't change, it's going to grind a lot of supporters' gears, and that's what it's done. I mean, there's a guy called Michael Cox. Go and Google Michael Cox ESPN. He wrote a fabulous article this week basically saying much the same, that it's just such an incredible mismatch having Sarri manage Chelsea, because, you know, we laughed at this kind of football and us trampling all over it for 15 years. The Arsenals of the world, the Barcelonas of the world, you know, for us, it's about our philosophy, if we have one, is A, completely opposite to theirs. And it's about, you know, it is about counter-attacking. It's not about pleasing the neutrals and being loved. We just like to win, and we like to have physicality, and we like to have people like Terry and Costa and Claude Makélélé and Kanté. We appreciate defensive midfielders rather than tippy-tappy football. So for Sarri to come in and change all that, I mean, I actually have a huge amount of sympathy for him, Mark, because, you know, he was always going to be up against it. And I don't think the club really understood this. Everybody's silent.
No, so a perfect fit would be Simeone, in fact.
Oh, Simeone, perfect.
Sorry, Mark. Yeah. Sorry, go on, mate.
No, I was just saying, I kind of understand that feeling, because it's just, it's an odd marriage, you know, with the two styles. And, I understand, and I don't want this to be taken the wrong way. I love the fact that we've won trophies with the style of play. But if you were to ask me which one do I prefer, to rather have the ball and be the aggressor or sit back, I kind of want to be the aggressor. I want to have the ball. I want to move the opponent around. I'm not saying that I didn't love the football that we played. I do. But it's extremely nerve-wracking at times to seem like we're holding on for last breath. You know what I mean? But that doesn't discount what we've won. But if I ever had to pick a style, I would rather play with the ball than without it, personally.
But Mark, you used the term marriage there. Recent statistics suggest that 42% of marriages in the UK end in divorce. Is it time for an amicable split?
I would wait until after the season at this point. I don't think it makes sense to do it at this point.
I think he'll be here to the end of the season, unless there's a real catastrophe. I think if we go out of the Europa League and we're not getting top six,
well, we
maybe won't.
We're not going to lose to Prague. No, I mean, so, I mean, I think the bottom line is that you're right, what we were saying earlier. We're probably not going to get in the top four. Yeah. So the only opportunity to finish in the Champions League will be winning the Europa League. The club will demand as a minimum that he gives us Champions League football. So you're not going to know until the conclusion of our journey in the Europa League. Yeah. So, but let's presume that we therefore get to the semi-final because we're going to beat Prague.
Yeah.
So what's the point of firing him after that?
Yeah, but then we lose to Benfica or Frankfurt. And
you
then
know, if we lost in the semi-final, there's no point in firing him.
But then
only be about 2 weeks of the season left.
Yeah. So we drag it out.
So he's here to the end.
I think we're going to get top four and win the Europa League, personally.
I love that.
I'll have a pint of whatever you're drinking,
Mark. Yeah. What time is it in Cincinnati?
It's more than a pint, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
It's a gallon.
I love your positivity, but I just think. I think fifth or sixth Europa League, if we have a little bit of luck on the way.
I mean, look, the thing is, Mark, don't get me wrong here. I mean, look, I am really very ambivalent and agnostic about Sarri. If Sarri makes all of this work miraculously and we play brilliant football, we win loads of stuff, I'll be delighted. I really will. All I care about really is how Chelsea are doing. I'm really not bothered about managers anymore. It's a pointless thing to be bothered about a manager at Chelsea. They're never there long enough. So, you know, I'm really quite agnostic about him. I don't hate him. You know, I don't want him to be run out of town. You know, I'm just kind of, well, meh about it, really.
If he could get them to play like Man City, which is they're not far away from, but they're sufficiently far away for it all to be a disaster, would you be happy with that?
Well, I'm happy if Chelsea are winning and Chelsea are playing great football. That's all I really care about.
But one thing though, JK,
I really don't like watching teams, particularly a Chelsea team, that are weak, that get trampled on by other teams. This is redolent of the whole Arsenalification of Chelsea that Tony Glover goes on about, you know, where you have very small effect players who you know get trampled over in a tackle and then they all start crying, going, but it's not fair. I don't like that
Big
kind
boy
of football.
Hurt me.
Yeah, I don't like that kind of football. I like physical,
which
aggressive
Chelsea
football.
Players are those?
Well, exactly. We don't. Well, really
if you watch Napoli, they were more of a physical team.
Good.
They weren't
excellent.
They weren't that type of soft
team. That's what I like. Good. Well, I'm up for that. That's football for me is still a man's sport. It's still a contact sport. You know, that's the beauty of it is to pit strength against skill.
When I refereed, I used to say that when people would go, "Ow, ref!" I go, "Get out, man's game, play on."
You're not meant to foul them, Chid, are you?
I kicked him. It was in trouble. Yeah.
Now listen, if Sarri turns it around, I will happily eat my hat. You know, in public. You know, but I just can't see.
Will
happening.
It be a Nan hat or a Poppadom hat?
I've got a choice.
It'd be an LA Dodgers hat.
Yeah.
What, made out of what? Rice.
Well, it's
a
it's,
rice
it's
hat.
A, it's a proper. Cotton. I think they used to call it snapbacks.
Yeah,
now.
They do. They call them. Yeah. They call them. Yeah, snapbacks. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll eat my LA.
Yeah, but surely I'm giving Dodgers. You an out here. Surely you could have it in a kind of in a food that's already been prepared, rather than having to eat the canvas.
I've got to eat my hat. Maybe have a bit of like sauce on it, to, you know.
Yeah, they'll make it palatable. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm a person.
chili sauce.
Yeah, hot chili sauce. Oh, horrible. Yeah. Oh, God, dreadful.
Actually, talk about
I do have
out...
two answers to the quiz.
Oh, do you? Go on, please. Tell us, Mark. Go on.
One I know for sure is Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink.
Correct.
Yes.
And Eddie Newton, I believe, is the other one, correct?
That, I believe, is correct.
Well done, sir. Correct.
You've got 50%. That's very good going. Yeah.
You get the other two, buy your drinks when you come over.
All right, exactly. So you're coming over for the Burnley match, are you, Mark?
I am. I can't wait. And I just found out that Zola is doing the stadium tour for the day that I'll be there. So it's going to cost like 200 quid, but it'd be worth it.
200 quid?
Also, is it because it's him? It goes
well,
up, does it?
Well done on
it's saying $99 quid, a person.
That's mental.
Oh, amazing. Well, I have your tickets.
Well, I get a free... There's a dinner, too, at Frank's.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. Do you get to shower with him?
Yeah.
That's an extra £50.
That's an extra 100. Yeah,
yeah. And if Ross Barkley walks in, it's an extra thousand.
All bets are off.
Yeah. Mark, thanks ever so much for your call. Mark, they're calling all the way from Cincinnati, Ohio. Don't go anywhere, because at the moment, we'll begin to cast our eyes forward to Cardiff.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. It's Cardiff at the weekend, which is often thought of as an easy place to go, but we've seen for various London clubs this season, West Ham included, that it can be a bit of a banana skin. Are you confident?
No.
What will happen again, as usual, is that we'll completely dominate the game in the first half, and if they then score a goal in the second half, with the only shot they've got, we'll lose.
Yeah. Mr. Warnock will specialise in set pieces. He loves a set piece, Mr.
And
Warnock,
they'll score from a set piece. Yeah.
Old Colin himself.
However, if we actually put something away in the first, if we score twice, the game will be over.
I think with Chelsea, the first goal is always crucial. As you say, we score first. I think we could go and win 3, 4, 5 quite easily.
Yeah.
But if we get to 30, 40 minutes, like Everton, confidence drops, we
and
don't
Wolves,
score.
Yeah.
I think he does zonal
marking. All the same patterns.
Yeah, zonal marking, isn't it, that he does? It's very easy to kind of run between the lines to score against
us. Well, it's the fact that you all need to do is play a very long ball for the corner to the back post. And there's always somebody standing there unmarked who just knocks it in.
Because Azpi's not quite tall enough for centre-half. It's Cardiff need it more than us, I think. Because I think... In terms of relegation, because I think realistically, I'm one of the players.
It'll be difficult to play there, but they're not anywhere near as good as us. But it's down to Higuain has to do something. They have to do something.
And I think Bamba's out, and he's their main talisman.
Oh yeah. He played very well against us.
All right, don't worry,
Cardiff.
Dan. They've got plenty of other people who can kick Eden Hazard.
Yeah,
yeah. And I mean that fullback.
Who's refereeing it? That would be really rather relevant. We'll find out.
Craig Pawson.
Is he? He's poor son.
Very poor. Poor. Look, we should smash the you-know-what out of them. And you, me and Dan know that.
Yeah.
I think even Johnny knows that, actually.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I'll give you a sample. I'll give you a sample of some of their results.
Yes,
okay?
I'd like
this. They've lost against... These are all Cardiff home results. They've lost against Arsenal 3-2, City 5-0, Burnley 2-1, United 5-1, Spurs 3-0, Watford 5-1, and Everton 3-0. We should go there and smash the you-know-what out of them. The trouble is, we know that we probably won't. And that therein lies the problem. Our away form is absolutely abysmal. And I think exactly what you said about the Everton match. If a team tries to match us in midfield or pressurises us in midfield, certainly physically dominates us, it's a problem because teams go through us. But the bigger issue, I think, is something that I've been moaning about for most of the season, is that we are... I think very vulnerable to set pieces like corners. I think
we were just saying.
We
leave the back.
Well, it's the zonal marking for me. But the trouble is, this is how teams like Cardiff score. So I could see a scenario playing out where, Cardiff are really in our face, kick lumps out of us, intimidate us, and defend. In a block, which we never, ever seem to be able to find a way around.
As always happens in these matches, the free kick anywhere in the Chelsea half, it becomes a really panicking situation for the defence. They'll do a decent centre and they all rush at it like maniacs.
And whereas it'll be a better than decent centre as well, because Camarasa, who takes the corners and wide ones for Cardiff, is actually very handy.
Yeah, he's handy.
No one's aggressive enough coming to meet the ball. When used to come back, he was always a free man. He used to always so many headers he win.
Yeah, but it was interesting watching Bonucci and Chiellini the other day in the Atletico, in the Juventus game. Completely just every ball is theirs and then it's legitimate because they're going for the ball.
Because we're not an aggressive team anymore.
It's true.
Just no tough, hard tackles. Rudiger's going to be, he's there, he's a bit of a beast, but... We're too nice. As soon as called Arsenal a team of son-in-laws, that's what we are now. We're
a team of son-in-laws.
That's what
who said that?
As soon as called Arsenal a team of son-in-laws.
That is super.
What does that mean?
But they're just very nice.
Yeah, they're going to be
playing
it
safe.
Be rude to the, never to the parents.
Me. Yeah.
Oh, right. Are you particularly? Do you walk into your parents-in-law's living room and just 2 foot somewhere?
Sadly, they're no longer with us. But I obviously used to when they were alive. Yeah. You know. No, I'm only joking. That's a brilliant way of putting it. And okay, now I understand where he's coming from. I quite
we're
like
just
that.
Just very imagine. Nice. We just got no.
Okay. Do you want to know something interesting? Because I've got a wadge of stats. I feel like Neville Chamberlain.
I think you should get the stats.
I have a piece of paper.
Waggle it. He's like, I have a piece of paper in my hand.
Angus Loughran.
I've met Angus Loughran. Yeah. I've had a drink with him. He's a decent bloke. Anyway, what we know about Sarri is that he is indubitably a record breaker for all the wrong reasons this season. Okay. Well, here's two more reasons that he might want to add to his tally of record breaking for Chelsea. Chelsea have not lost to two promoted clubs in the same season since 2012-13. There you go. There's one we could lose tomorrow, and you know he can break another record.
Claim that one, yeah.
Yeah, and then the other one is Chelsea have won every previous Premier League meeting with Cardiff City. So there you go. There's two.
So it's going to be a draw then.
Well, who knows? But I mean, so he could lose and break that record as well. So it's all there for you, Sarri. Do your worst. I mean, because you know the reality is, as I keep saying, we should beat them. The players
we
have are better than theirs.
Again, if you put to bed by half time,
well, the crowd will be for them every throw in.
It's quite a hostile atmosphere down there as well.
You can always tell the teams when, like, going to watch Fulham, that every time they got a throw, they all went mad.
Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah, it's not quite... Come on, Stoke were the worst for that when Stoke first came up, because mind you, their throws were
Roy Delap
hurling the ball in. It would have made sense.
It's not quite as intimidating as Ninian Park was.
No, that's true. That was horrible, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But they'll be well up for it. And Warnock would have. See, my other worry is Warnock. He would have been stoking them up all week. Kick him off the park.
As he did with Rangers against
he's
us.
He's always going to. Yeah. That's his MO. That's what he does. You know.
Kick him. Sign 10 strikers and kick him.
Yeah. He's going to. That's what worries me. And we don't have anybody who can deal with that or exact some retribution, which is kind of what you need. I mean, that's why John Obi Mikel was so fantastic for us. You know, if anybody kicked any one of our little players, he'd be right in there stamping on them. Fantastic players.
And then, he'd stamp and then say, he'd then complain to the referee. Yeah. He'd say, no, I was just a fair tackle. So he would constantly do that.
And then he was always in the referee's ear, you know. He was in the players' heads. Remember the penalty in Munich?
Yeah.
Getting into Robin's ear, you know.
You
need players like that. You know, bit of edge to them.
Do you think players can learn to do that?
No. I think you're born with
it's what you can get away with, I think. I think after a bit, you probably tentatively try it and think, I wonder what's going to happen. Then you think, oh, I think I've wound him up. I think I'll have another go.
But I mean, this is a ridiculous example, but I shall dump it on you anyway. I mean, when I played football, and I was rubbish, by the way, I was also quite small and quite skinny. And I realised the only way I could play football was to be completely and utterly psychotically aggressive. So I would 2 foot people all the time because they didn't expect it from me. And actually the psychological damage it did to them by being 2-footed by this very small, skinny chap who looked really innocuous usually meant that I won the battle that game. So there you go.
Did you do it very early on?
Because
I remember Ballack
kicking
McMahon
at
Liverpool.
First challenge.
And McMahon disappeared completely from the game. That was the end of that.
First challenge, Jake.
Yeah, first challenge, always, okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
make your mark.
I just used to whisper in people's ears as they were going past.
They probably ran off the pitch.
Was it about Ross Barkley?
Have you seen his bottom?
So, happily, I was playing football at a time when Ross Barkley was a twinkle in his mother's eye. But
Mum wasn't born when you were playing.
No, hey, when I was... Well, I've got a little boots I used to play in.
They were still wearing caps.
They were. And the shorts were all the way up to your chest.
Did you use dubbing?
And you put your tie around.
A bit of dubbing on the top.
Put dubbing on your forehead.
Fantastic. Where are we, Johnny?
Cardiff,
well, who are we? Where are we?
We are the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport Radio.
All right.
Chelsea Fancast, which is always good. And coming up, we'll be asking... Could Hudson-Odoi start against Cardiff?
Yeah.
This is Love Sport.
Always be wary of suggesting that Callum Hudson-Odoi could start for Chelsea around the Chelsea fan cast. That's what I've learned in the last 5 minutes of my life. Gents, is there absolutely no chance that he gets in the starting 11 for Cardiff?
No chance at all.
I can see it pretty much interview. Callum's had many minutes for England. He's not ready. He'll come on after 89 minutes where we're either 4-0 down or 1-1. And he won't play.
No possibility of 4-0 up, Dan.
No, very unlikely. I think he'll play both the Prague matches. I think he might get a run
starting.
Against, yeah, 100%. I think he might start against Brighton on Wednesday, but I don't think he'll play him because he's played 100 minutes for England. He's, you know, he's 18. He needs to save his energy.
There was a raised eyebrow there for anyone who unfortunately doesn't have a camera in the studio.
Yeah. there's a program going on. Who knew? No, Hudson-Odoi. I mean, he should start. Of course, he should start. And
you've changed your tune though.
No, I never said he shouldn't start. He should start because he is right now, I think, a better option than either Willian or Pedro.
Okay,
I think. It was quite interesting having, you know, moaned like stink about Sarri earlier. You know, he made the point that Hudson-Odoi, I thought quite disingenuously, wasn't very good on the right for England, but looked much better when he played on the left, which is possibly true because the left is his position. And of course, one of the issues that we've got about Hudson-Odoi is, do we really honestly expect him to play instead of Eden Hazard, who plays on the left? Well, clearly no. And I think Sarri was quite subtly making that point. But he can play on the right, and he has played on the right for Chelsea as well as for England. And I think he offers more because he can cross the ball, I think, better. He can skin people for fun, and he's always looking to go towards the goal.
He's certainly got the best cross of anybody, isn't he? That kind of dipping thing that goes in.
Yeah. He's direct. He's a proper old-fashioned winger. He's direct.
He is. And we've moaned about it like stink all season that whatever system we're playing, whether it's Sarri's system or whatever system we use to play, what you get from Pedro and Willian, you don't get proper wing play. You get them running inside. You keep them keeping hold of the ball. You keep them doing little intricate 1-2s with other... You know, they're not direct. Mm-hmm. Callum Hudson-Odoi has got one thought in his mind when he has that ball. It's to beat players, go towards the goal, crack a shot off or lay a ball off to somebody who might be able to score.
Which is what you need, really, because they're not doing it.
And what we want, doing it. That is exciting, entertaining football in my book. Gets my heart racing, that's for sure. So there you go. Did that answer your question?
That does answer my question comprehensively.
But will he start? No.
That was the question, was it?
Yeah.
No, he won't start, Johnny. No.
Okay. That was quick.
I'll go back to figuring out how to use Instagram.
Wouldn't it be interesting if he didn't even figure in the subs? That would surprise me.
To be really honest, you know what? If I was Sarri, that's the kind of thing I'd do. I'd just do that.
Wind up.
Yeah, definitely.
Just for he goes, this is for Bantz, you know.
Yeah. There we go. I'd do it, man. Yeah, bless him. It'd be funny if he did
that. Well, didn't he do that after he made his debut and scored in Europe? He wasn't even the squad for
the next match. Yeah, same with Loftus-Cheek when he got that hat-trick, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think there's an element of Sarri being wary of the positive psychological impact becoming a bit too much in the sense that he might be trying to keep him grounded and make him realise that he's
I think that's rubbish anyway.
No, I think, and I think, well, you would know, wouldn't you, Chidge? You know about this kind of thing psychologically. What's happening?
I think it is as likely to do him harm by, you know, keeping a lid on his expectations as it is to allow him to just go with the flow.
To fly.
Again, you've got to look at Sancho in Germany, and he's tearing that league up at the moment, isn't he? Same age, both in the under-17 World Cups. Yeah.
I mean, these kids, I mean, the other thing about Chelsea's kids in particular, but, you know, kids in general have no fear. They don't get tired, so that's absolutely rubbish. Okay, I understand that they're not fully developed physically or mentally, so you do have to be fairly cautious.
You might have a couple of inches to grow, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. But you've got to be quite careful, you know. But on the whole, let them run. And then when they fall down and hit that crisis in confidence...
Kick them.
No, well, maybe in your world, Johnny. But actually, I think the sensible thing to do is that's when you earn your money as a manager, because then you have to pick them back up.
Mm.
But don't inhibit them. Don't constrain them. It's ridiculous. Anyway, lecture over.
Mm-hmm. So let Callum Hudson-Odoi off the leash is
definitely
the message.
Let him off the leash. Definitely, I would.
I mean, what harm can it be to give him... How many league games we've got left? Nine?
Eight games left.
What harm can it do? If we're focusing purely on the Europa League, you let your Williams, your Pedros play in the Europa League because they've got the experience, they've got the know-how, they've got the savviness. Give him eight games just to, you know, really get
He'll do the opposite. He'll play Odoi in the Europa League.
No, but if he perceives that the Europa League is the only realistic chance against the Champions League... I'd agree that William and Pedro are probably better in terms of big match experience than Callum.
Perhaps he's made a promise to them that he'd play them all in the Europa League.
Maybe he has, but I don't know what goes through Sarri's mind. If I was Sarri...
Pure nicotine.
Pictures of cigarettes, I think.
Yeah.
That's what goes through his mind.
I would be like, okay, right, Europa League, William, Pedro, boom, Callum, you're going to play six the next eight games, you're going to start, let's see what you can do. Because ultimately, if he goes, if Sarri's gone in May, it's kind of irrelevant. Because, you know, there'll be a new manager coming in. And then he's going to prove himself again.
But if he
again.
Goes and Hazard goes and Sarri goes, what happens?
We've got Pulisic.
Of course we have.
And Willian and Pedro.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah.
What do you... Andy Gwain. Oh, no, no. He probably will have gone back. Yeah. So it'll be Tammy Abraham. Oh,
Giroud.
No, Oli Giroud, mate.
I love Oli Giroud's slow, creeping rise up the all-time list of goal scorers for France.
Third.
He's now behind only Henri and Platini.
Yeah. How about that, eh?
Which is quite cool.
Not bad for a bloke who can't score.
Well, quite.
Yeah, but he's a great player. I mean, I've had this argument with Arsenal fans as well.
Arsenal fans, in my experience, love him, don't
they? Yeah, no, exactly that. I mean, I spoke to Dave Seager the other week on the Sunday show I do, and he wasn't having it. He said, mate, he said he consistently scored 20 goals a season for us. He does exactly what you want a striker to do. We loved him, and we were not happy that he was sold. Not least to you, but we were not happy that he was sold.
But then they got Aubameyang. I mean, that's another bit of crazy Chelsea business. Yeah. You know, taking Giroud so they can get Aubameyang. I mean,
just bonkers, isn't it?
But for Arsenal, at the point where they sold Giroud effectively to keep Welbeck on grounds that Welbeck can play off the left. And Arsenal fans at that point were just going ballistic. Yeah,
Welbeck hasn't figured at all, has he?
Well, Welbeck's been quite badly injured.
I think he did his cruise ship again, didn't he, or something?
Yeah, he did it against Sporting Lisbon.
He's out for the season and out of contract as well.
Yeah, it's good news for Arsenal. if Hudson-Odoi were let off the leash completely, what do you think would happen?
He'll be substituted.
He would be firmly put back on the leash.
62 minutes for Kovacic.
Yeah. Hang on, but he won't be there anyway. We've established he may not even be a sub.
If he plays, I think he'll nothing to lose. He can show what talent he's got.
But do you think he would suddenly flourish immediately? Do you think he'd score goals?
I think
goals?
Like any young players, he'd have some good games, have some bad games. He'd, you know, make some wrong decisions, but it's all about learning in the game.
Interesting to see him kicked. We haven't seen anybody go for him, haven't we? We haven't seen it been marked.
He's too quick for him.
Perhaps he's too quick. Yeah.
Listen, he's 18 years old. What can go wrong? He might, you know, misplace a pass or, you know, overhit a cross. He might get a couple of goals.
I mean, he was at fault, really, for the Montenegrin goal, as I remarked on the show on Monday. I mean,
to an extent, I think, because there's two phases of play after.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. I accept that. But, I mean, you know, right at the beginning, I think he gave the ball away. But, look, anybody can give the ball away, you know.
Craig Burley was good at it in semi-finals.
He was, that was his speciality, wasn't it? But, you know,
That's about learning on the game, because they were saying afterwards on TV that he should have gone for the header. If nothing else, it made it more difficult for the player behind him to try and win the ball and move it forward.
Yeah.
But that's in-game learning experience.
Yeah, exactly. He admitted it in the presser afterwards, didn't he? You know, I'm with these chaps. You know what can you lose? You know, let him go. Let him have a bash at it. For goodness sake, it would cheer the fans up. It really would. And I think that right now that's probably worth it, because there's a lot of very unhappy Chelsea supporters around.
But it's sounding like Sarri will ignore them. We've established that Hudson-Odoi probably won't start against Cardiff at the weekend, but who'll be starting for the Welsh side? In just a moment, we'll be talking to Dom Booth, Cardiff City correspondent for Wales Online, to find out.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Stamford Chidge, Jonathan Kidd, and Dan Silver from the Chelsea Fancast. I'm delighted to say we're also joined on the line by Dom Booth, who's Cardiff City correspondent for Wales Online. Evening, Dom. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Are Cardiff confident ahead of this game?
Evening, Johnny. Well, it's difficult to say, really. Cardiff haven't played the game in what seems like an eternity. They've had a three-week break with FA Cup and internationals. So, it's probably a game Cardiff don't expect to get anything out of, given they've not got any points against the top six this season. So, yeah, it's sort of going in a little bit blind.
I'd have thought that'd been perfect for Chelsea. Seemed to be the first team to give you some points, to be quite frank, the way things have been going recently. the pattern we were working out, what seems to be happening recently, is that Chelsea play immensely well for the first half, but just can't score. And then you get a breakaway. And then Chelsea go to pieces, and you just apply lots of very good set pieces, which of course Warnock is a master at, and the crowd will get behind you, and then Chelsea will lose 2-0 unless they score first. Of course,
sounds like quite a negative outlook from you guys. Maybe shows more about Chelsea. I think Cardiff are expecting.
I think it's more realistic, to be honest.
Dom, he's the happy one, by the way.
I'm the happy one. Exactly. Yeah.
No, okay.
I tell you what, Dom. I found some really fascinating stats about Cardiff, which actually bizarrely, I mean, because I said before what you won't know when we were talking about the game 10 minutes or so ago. I mean, frankly, Chelsea should smash Cardiff on Sunday. I mean, we've got better players. Cardiff have lost, as you were saying, really. They've lost quite heavily to some of the top sides at home this season. Really, we should do it. But it just gives you an idea of where we are with Chelsea at the moment, because we don't quite know which Chelsea side is going to turn up. And then when certain things happen in a game, you just know we're not going to get out of it. When Chelsea go 1-0 down, the belief in what they're trying to do just seems to disappear. Or if a team gets in their face and pressurises them and doesn't give them any time and space, they lose the plot. But anyway, here are these statistics I was talking about. 41% of Cardiff's 27 Premier League goals have come in the last 15 minutes. They don't give up. I like that. They've conceded They've conceded 11 goals from outside of the box in the Premier League this season. Only Burnley have conceded more. Well, that's all right, because Chelsea, you know, they always hit the woodwork. So you'll be fine.
Okay.
And when Cardiff have taken the lead, this is a cracker. When Cardiff have taken the lead, they've only dropped 3 points this season, and no side has dropped fewer points from winning positions. So, you know...
On that last one,
yeah.
I'll say, Cardiff never take the lead anyway.
Oh,
so
okay.
Wait
for Chelsea
to come
to... They've
barely ever been in front.
Okay, fair point. I see you and raise you, I think is what you're saying. I like that. But you see what I mean? I mean, a lot of those statistics actually kind of... If you use Chelsea as the counterpoint, you know, Cardiff kind of do things that, you know, well, that Chelsea do very badly at responding to. So, you know, you're not without hope on Sunday by any means.
And Warnock can be a practitioner of the dark arts when it comes to when you're one up.
Yeah.
Players mysteriously fall to the ground injured.
I mean, I think it was, Dom will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I saw a fair bit of the Cardiff Wolves game. The one where Bomba got injured, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I thought they did very well there. And Wolves are a decent team, let's be under no illusion here. And I thought Cardiff matched them, actually. And West Ham, they absolutely monstered West Ham, although I suspect that West Ham just couldn't be bothered to turn up. So who knows?
Yeah, Cardiff were excellent against West Ham.
Yeah, they were, weren't they?
And they can do that at home. They can put together really coherent, disciplined, compact performances at home. And like you said before, Chelsea... are going to have the ball. Cardiff are happy not to have the ball.
Yeah.
Cardiff happy to wait for their moments. They'll go with a really pacey front line, hit Chelsea on the counter. Yeah. They'll try and do what everyone tries to do at the moment, which is crowd Jorginho and make sure he can't get the supply line to Hazard.
Are you sure it won't be kick Jorginho rather than crowd Jorginho? Surely kick Jorginho and kick Hazard. Don't you think that'll be the case? That appears to be what most teams do.
Well, Cardiff aren't all about kicking. I understand where you're coming from, and there's no reason why Cardiff shouldn't be physical, because clearly Jorginho's been shown to be susceptible against teams like that, so why not?
Yeah, I know. Dom, I have no problem with
it. No, it's just his previous experiences of Warnock, particularly at Queen's Park Rangers, has actually just kicked Chelsea all over the park, so it wouldn't surprise me if he actually says you need to be a bit more physical.
Well, I mean, you know, one can
Chelsea.
Only imagine the dressing room talk, can't you, as Warnock said. They don't like it, up them. They don't like it, up them, lads. Kick them. Kick them at every opportunity. And when you're not kicking them, kick them some more.
The one player who that doesn't apply to and who Cardiff should be very, very fearful of, scored a hat-trick against them in the reverse fixtures, obviously, is Hazard. Seems to be able to ride those kicks and ride those challenges. And, you know, Cardiff have got nobody of that ilk, nobody anywhere near that ilk. So, you know, like you said before, on paper, Chelsea should steamroller Cardiff, and, you know, Hazard's as good as anyone in the league, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. On his day, he's probably the best player in the league, I think, but, you know, he doesn't always have those days. And, I mean, a lot of people say he disappears out of games, Dom, but I think actually what happens is he's a tough little nut, you know, and he does take a lot of punishment and a lot of kicks that don't get, you know, blown up for by the referee, but he still plays on. But that's quite often, I think, when he disappears, when he's literally carrying an injury and not going off for it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. How do you think it's going to go?
It's interesting. I think Chelsea will win. I think probably narrowly. I think Cardiff might give them an early scare or something like that. You say set pieces. Cardiff have really underperformed from set pieces this season.
I'm glad to hear it.
Compared to what they did in the Championship last season, they were immense. They scored so many goals, no one could live with them, from corners and free kicks. They've barely scored goals from set pieces this season. So I see Cardiff's main supply line coming from counter-attacks. Chelsea maybe getting stung early on, but then Chelsea will have such a wealth of possession. It'll probably be like, you know, they'll just grind Cardiff down, maybe nick it 2-1 or something like that.
Who's your key man? Who's the man to watch for you?
I think Camarasa in midfield.
Yeah.
If Cardiff are going to have any sort of percentage of the ball, is going to come through him. Very good at transitioning from defence to attack and ensuring that the ball just doesn't keep coming back at Cardiff. And he's got a goal in him as well. Got a good long-range shot in him. Scored a fantastic goal at Leicester earlier in the season, in the last minute. So, yeah, he's my key man. Everything Cardiff do depends on whether he plays well, really.
And do you think he'll stay up this season?
Million-dollar question, isn't it? Yeah. I think Burnley have got real tough running. And Cardiff go to Burnley in a couple of weeks, which is going to be
huge.
I think that's the decider.
Yeah.
If they win that, I think they'll stay up.
Because Huddersfield, Fulham are gone, aren't they? And I guess between you and Burnley.
Well, you'll have 3 points tomorrow, so that'll be pretty good.
It's good that Cardiff have sort of put Huddersfield and Fulham down, really, because everyone would have had Cardiff below those two, I think, in their pre-season predictions.
Yeah, I've certainly been surprised by Cardiff in a good way, I have to say. Dom, you've given your vague indication, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to put you on the spot for a specific score prediction. What are you going to go for?
I'll go 2-1 Chelsea, but Cardiff to score first. There you go. You can't get more specific than that.
Cardiff to score first.
What minute, Dom?
Eight.
Who and Eight with minute. Which good. Foot?
There you go. Right footer from Hoylett.
There we go. Heard it here first. Wonderful stuff, Dom. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Dom Booth there, who is the Cardiff City correspondent for Wales Online. Well, we've heard the Cardiff view. Coming up, it's time to get the Chelsea take on things.
This is Love Sport.
The Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. We've heard the Cardiff City view of this weekend's game, but for you guys personally, how do you think it's going to pan out?
Well, I've become Mr. Pessimist, as you probably noticed.
No, but you were Sarri's great defender, Jonathan.
I am his great defender. I still am, but I just don't think he's making them work. And I think it doesn't matter how much they dominate the game, which they will. They'll dominate the whole of the first half. If we don't score, they'll win. And so I reckon it's going to be either 2-0 to them or 5-0 to us.
Well,
that's an extreme.
Yeah.
Not particularly confident. I think it's going to be a 1-1 draw. I think it'll be another turgid, very typical Chelsea performance. They'll give us a lot of the ball from our penalty box to first 15 yards.
They won't have the ball at all.
No, Chelsea will have the ball.
Cardiff won't have the
ball. No, I'm saying they'll let us have the
I'm
ball.
I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. And they'll just be like...
Don't panic.
What do you mean? Why did you stop agreeing with me? No. So basically, they'll play literally like, 1-9-1, and that'll be it. And we won't break them down. It'll get very frustrated. There'll be loads of Twitter getting mad and we'll be getting frustrated. And I'll be like, oh, no. And then hopefully Spurs Liverpool to cheer us all up afterwards.
And
lots of injuries.
They'll score a goal from a corner where there's nobody at the back post at all and it's just a tap in.
So on the Cardiff goal threat then, is there anyone in that team who actually worries you?
I don't even know any of them. Are.
I mean, Hoylett's a danger and Camarasa is...
Camarasa.
They've got a Scottish guy up front who's quite aggressive. I think it's Patterson, yeah.
He's quite an aggressive. Being a striker who also plays at right back, and you think, pick one. They're not even similar.
But he's quite an aggressive.
He is.
And,
probably because he plays right back.
I thought he's a striker.
He is. He's a striker.
He plays
at right back and centre midfield.
He's multifaceted. But, up against someone like Luis, who doesn't really like it. Hard, should we say?
Haven't they as well?
Niasse from Everton. He seems to go on loan at Christmas and then get 4 or 5 goals. Yeah. He won me my fantasy league a couple of years ago because I signed him when he went to Hull and he got like 7 goals.
Are you a keen fantasy player, Dan?
I am.
How are you getting on this year?
This year, I've gone all Spursy. I started off really, really well and I'm third.
Oh no!
Yeah.
I did the opposite. I started off 8th and I'm now 1st.
Yeah. I'm only 4 points behind top place.
Well, that doesn't count then. Yeah. 4 points is sort of the equivalent of half a point.
It is like the Premier League. It's the difference between £500 and £100.
But don't you feel that
third.
What kind of
league are you playing in?
It's
all above.
Everyone puts in 20 quid into the pot. And it's one of these leagues where you've only got one of each player, so you can't have any more than one Hazard, one Aubameyang. So I've got some
Don't you feel in fantasy football you're being unfaithful to your team by creating teams?
I don't have
players.
Any Liverpool players in my team.
Good, that's exactly what I meant.
Morals, man of principle.
I've got no Liverpool players, no Spurs players, no Arsenal players.
Yes.
And I feel cleansed.
Yeah, but also, your team must be awful.
I mean, it's not bad. I'm decent. I'm just behind the leader.
Okay. Well, it's impressive stuff to do it without any top players. Any Cardiff players in the team?
What do you think?
No.
Well, it could be.
No.
I've got a Cardiff player. I've got Camarasa sitting on my bench.
That's why you're all in eighth.
I'm I'm first.
No way. I thought you said eight.
He never gets on, though, does he?
Well, he has been injured.
Do you like triple captain him and then it all goes wrong?
I can't. I got my triple captain right. I triple captained Aubameyang.
We're discussing words that I don't know.
Have you never tried this, Jonathan?
Yeah, vaguely, but I've got it.
What is this thing called fantasy football? I don't have enough time for fantasy. I like reality.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like it's football in Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, for God's sake.
Are you the actual dream?
Do you know what they
should do? You can wear a cape.
No. Yeah. They should rebadge it for Chelsea fans only and call it Game of Moans.
Oh, very good.
Very good.
Very good.
Who's Sarri now?
I've been waiting to throw that one.
No, I just thought of it off the top of my head, Jonathan.
And I've got a great team name because everyone thinks I look like Chiellini, so I'm Chiellini Concani.
I shall let you into a secret. The last time I played fantasy football was probably about 1995, and my team was called Celery FC.
Celery FC.
Yeah.
May I ask why?
Because Chelsea.
And I had another one the next year called Celery Vigo, which I thought was quite funny.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Do you not know the Celery song?
No, apparently not.
Celery.
You need a beep.
Then if she don't
beep, we'll I'll take another beep.
I do know that one.
And we had a song for Fabregas. So Fabregas, Celery is nothing to be scared of.
Right. Well, it's actually very interesting because in the break we were talking about the bizarreness of what you remember and what you don't. And I've just realised that I had heard that chart before. But I think there is a reason why.
Deeply embedded into the dark. Darkest recesses of your
psyche. Yeah, defeat.
It's when he was hit on the head with a piece of celery on the shoulder and collapsed to the floor.
I see.
Mm. Yeah. And we thought, I didn't really think.
Kind of like when Rivaldo got hit in the you know what, and then went down.
I threw a massive lump of celery.
I'm glad you said celery then.
Yes. A lump of celery at Jean Tigana in the FA Cup semi final.
At Villa Park.
Yeah. Well, actually, about 30, 40 people threw lumps of celery at Jean Tigana at Villa Park in the FA Cup semi final against Fulham in 2002.
John Terry.
But I feel that I think maybe mine might have connected with it.
And it was a big lump, was it?
It was, and I've got a very good arm, you know.
Jean, if you're listening, I'm very sorry.
Allegedly.
Other vegetables are available.
It can't be allegedly if you're saying you did it.
Well, I can't be sure.
You can't be sure.
I was quite a way away.
There was a lot of celery flying around.
There was a lot of celery flying around.
There was a lot of celery flying around. Were you trying to hit him, or was it one of these throws where you wanted to be seen to be throwing celery?
Of course. Well, you know, well, I don't know, just throwing. I mean, I remember on the way up for that match, we drove up, Dr. Mart, who used to do the podcast with me years ago, we drove up, and we had to stop, we're in Fulham actually, we drove coming up Fulham Palace Road to get on the M4, and he kept stopping at supermarket, you know, like random kind of, you know, grocers.
What, I'm buying celery?
And I said, why are you keep stopping?
Different kinds of celery.
Because they didn't have enough.
Oh.
You know, people had been buying it, or people had been doing the same thing all morning and they were all sold out of celery.
So what you're actually doing is shelling Jean Tigana with celery.
Yeah. Just lightly throwing it.
It depends on the bits, because the top end, it's really rather nice. It flies well. But when you get down to the bottom,
you get a bowl bit. You've got to break it off the base and chuck it.
Yeah, you do.
But it was a question of those. I would always go, yes, with a little bit of celery. Whereas some people are going, yeah, come on.
Proper underarm.
I've got another quick celery story. When I did that kind of promo in the, what was the So Bar back in those days.
Yeah.
And I filmed, it was the only camera crew ever filmed in that bar, because I knew them all. And it all kicked off with the celery song, and they had loads of celery, and my poor cameraman just got assailed by celery. But he stood his ground and carried on filming. But of course, when I was editing all the rushes from that day's filming, there were, you know, bits were sticking in the lens of the camera, and you could see it was like brilliant. Like if you slowed it down, this kind of bit of celery coming towards the camera lens. And there was so much celery in that camera, it took him ages to get it clean.
That's one for the IMAX, isn't it?
It is.
You can see the celery really coming out the screen.
Should have filled it in 3D. I didn't tell them that. They said, we're not giving you the budget for that.
Like it was sweet potatoes. It's going to be much harder, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So there you go. Do you want me to reveal the quiz?
I think we should have the quiz in case.
Hang on.
You hold that, Dan. Now Dan's got my phone. I can't tell you who got the answers right.
And also, he could do some serious damage.
Oh yeah, I'm still drumming. Right, okay. Shush. No more drumming.
The four that we found.
I mean, I can't believe only four played, but I only had a peremptory look today. Danny Drinkwater, which I think some people got. Steve Finiston. I know Eddie McCready's Blue and White Army got that. Most people got Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. And Mark, who phoned up earlier, he got Eddie Newton, so that was a good shout. And both you, Dan, and Mark, or Eddie McCready, he's blowing what I mean,
Nathan
both
said Blake. Nathan.
Well, Nathan Blake never actually played a game for Chelsea, but he was a youth product. So, as I love you both, and I'm feeling in a magnanimous mood.
And he also called Ross Turnbull as well.
Turnbull?
Yeah, yeah, Eddie.
No way.
Yeah, Mark,
so
later tweet. Eddie,
so there's six then. Yeah. Excellent, okay. So you've all done very well. Yeah. Well, there you go, that's the quiz.
That's amazing. Boom. That was a much shorter quiz than normal.
Well, I could only find four of them. You know, normally I find loads, you know. But I didn't have the thorough, detailed research. I didn't have time to do it this week.
No, so but also there will be fewer.
There will be fewer, that's true, but there are techniques that I use to discover the really obscure ones. But
are you willing to reveal them?
No, I'm not, because then everybody will do it, but
as an extra,
I didn't have time to do
that. What year did Cardiff win the FA Cup?
1927, Your Honour.
Oh, very well done.
Because they were listening to it in the Andes. Did you remember the Ripping Yarns programme, Cross the Andes by Frog? Do you remember Ripping Yarns?
Must have taken
I do,
a while.
Michael Palin? Yes.
That whole episode featured on these funny little Patagonian people in 1927 listening to a wireless to Cardiff beat Arsenal in the Cup, because they're all Cardiff fans, because as we know, there are a lot of Welsh settlers in Patagonia.
There are.
Such an educational show.
I didn't know that.
You had
Welsh
no
settlers
idea.
In Patagonia.
Yeah,
is
very
it?
True.
Not
true.
A sentence I was expecting
hear. They all brought their own sheep as well. True.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, it's very true. So there you go.
So, in terms of Chelsea's conquest, Chelsea looking to settle in Wales rather than Welsh.
There we go. There's a link in there somewhere.
We can get away from potentially dangerous
territory. They're going to herd the Cardiff sheep.
There
I reckon they're going to win 3-1, mate. I'm confident, actually.
So, Chidge is going 3-1. Going 3-1. Obviously had a chance to discuss the game in a bit more depth. Does anyone want to revise their particular predictions? Jonathan, you were saying 2-0 to Cardiff or 5-0 to Chelsea.
Yeah, all right, 2-1 to Cardiff and 5-0 to Chelsea.
You've got to pick one result.
Okay, 2-0, 2-1, 2 and... No, I can't. It's impossible.
It's not impossible.
No, in my world it is.
Okay. So you're going either 2-1 to Cardiff or 5-0 to Chelsea. And what happens if neither of those results come to fruition? The universe collapses.
I fail miserably and I implode. Get sucked into it.
He'll be moaning on Monday night on the show, that'll be for sure.
Right, and Dan, what are we saying?
I'm sticking with 1-1.
We're sticking with 1-1, and we asked for extreme specificity from Dom Booth of Cardiff City correspondent at Wales Online. So I'm going to have to ask you, Dan, the one Chelsea goal, who's it scored by and with which foot?
Eden Hazard off his bum.
Off his bum, and like that, we are back to the beginning of the show, and Ross Barkley and Blue Thongs, which is a bizarre way to start.
Indeed it is.
Not quite what I expected, I have to say, Blue Thongs.
I think it's revealed an aspect about us as a group.
Well, I think we've all grown as people. Mm. And hopefully,
I'm not sure I've shrunk actually.
And hopefully, Chelsea's points total will grow at the weekend when they take on Cardiff. You will have to join us next week on the Chelsea Fan Show to find out how they get on.
Bye bye.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.